My safe word is Quetzal. Let's go.
Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
I'm Netta. Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm doing good. I don't know Excellent. Why I sounded surprised, but I'm doing good.
Or no one come for us and say we're doing well. I'm pretty sure you can say I'm doing good. I think you can say both.
If you come for me, it's offensive because I'm a non-native speaker, actually.
I had a dream last night I was back in high school English class, and so you can trust me because it's all fresh.
I had a dream last night that I was taking a high school math class, but I was myself as of right now. Like, I had memories of already having been in high school. It was just happening again. But my high school math class in my dream was at a movie theater, I think because of social distancing. So everyone was just sitting at a movie theater doing math.
That sounds challenging. I'm sorry also if there's a lot of, like, spooky howling wind sounds happening in the background here. It's just very windy in my neck of the woods, and, you know, there's no accounting for that. Can't put myself in a soundproof booth in my own house. So that's what we're working with, the weather and whatnot.
But we're here!
You know, we are here, yeah, and aside from the spookiness of October, the most important thing that happened in October was the Grand Prix Series, in whatever form it is taking this year, kicked off with a very different Skate America.
Yeah, we were kind of in Vegas, and Skate America did happen. Obviously, disclaimer, we don't know how good it is that things are happening, but since they are, we're going to talk about yeah, it.
As always.
We don't make any decisions.
We're not sure what should be happening or how it should be happening and how it happened in relation to that. But we do know that we had a good time talking, or we had a good time watching what did happen.
Yeah, so Skate America happened, and it was great. It was so fun.
It was really, really interesting. You know, a lot happened. And a surprising amount of people were there, although they were in cardboard cutout form. The Geico Gecko was there over and over again. I was really concerned and a little distracted by the implication that he has access to cloning technology. That was upsetting for me. I also didn't... You pointed out the scale of things were upsetting, and I would agree with
First
that.
First of all, regarding the Geico Gecko... What if there is only one, the gecko, but he has, like, friends and family, and those were the geckos we saw in the audience? I would prefer that to, like, the implication that he is cloning himself. Although, if I were cloning myself, I would send my clones to see figure skating.
Yeah. This would be a great time for cloning technology for a whole bunch of reasons. And if it does exist, I think it's really selfish and borderline evil of the Geico Gecko to keep that to himself.
Let's talk about the scale of things.
I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah, talk about the scale of things.
The scale of things was upsetting. I appreciate the concept of the cardboard cutout audience. I think there's something that has been happening in a lot of sports and other events that are happening without audiences, where people are like, oh, it's like so weird and upsetting and dystopian that there is no one in the seats. And I think it was funny and kind of sweet to replace that with the cardboard cutouts of, like, fans and family and people cheering on who paid $100 to be there. However, no one accounted for scale. And if you go back and look at it, that's why it looks so deeply uncanny, is because you would have a nice old lady and next to her would be a poodle and it would be bigger than her. And that's just not okay with me.
Listen, what happens in Vegas?
Are you implying that Vegas has been keeping the dirty little secret of gigantic cardboard cats?
Yeah, big pets. Is that what happens in Vegas is big pets.
I always thought it was like gambling and like drugs and partying, but big cats is
it's big pets. I have a question for you, Netta, and I want you to answer me honestly. What if we kissed at Skate America and we were both cardboard Chris Canarums?
What if?
Just think about that.
You can't see it, but I'm doing the, like, ooh-woo fingers.
Oh, the ooh-woo finger touch, yeah. I'm blushing and covering my face like a monkey emoji. Chris Canarum was there as a cardboard
several times over.
And nothing will ever be funny again. Nothing will ever be funny again. I'm sorry. You either die a hero or you live to become a cardboard Chris Canarum cutout watching your wife skate with another man.
And thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode. That's all we had to
say. That's the whole podcast, actually. Thank you. That's all we had to say.
No, actually, we are going to start our actual coverage of the actual skating, which happened in front of the cardboard cutouts.
I also want to say before we start that obviously there's no plushie corner because there were no plushies. But for a minute I thought, well, wouldn't it have been fun if the plushies were the audience? Because they've done that at certain baseball games and stuff, like big plushies. And then I was, something about, and I'm not a scientist, but something about plushies feels a little bit less sanitary than cardboard cutouts. Is it because they seem, like, fluffy and, like, they could retain moisture?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that a plushie could be dirty.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna go into all the ways that that could be taken out of context. what I am gonna say is that the infamous scene in The Velveteen Rabbit where they burned all the plushies because the child got sick traumatized me so much that I think about it nearly every day as an adult.
Oh, no.
And so that leads me to believe that that a stuffed toy could be a vector for disease, and thus the plushie corner is going to be safely distanced away from us, sadly enough. But you know, you can take away the plushies, you can take away the human audience members, but you can't take away the skating. I mean, you can, because a lot of the events are canceled, but they didn't this time.
There's, before we move on from the plushie pitch that you're presenting us with, there's a Criminal Minds episode where this person performs, like, very perverse plays for an audience, and the reveal in the final, like, seconds of the episode is it was actually, like, a theater full of, like, dolls and plushies and stuff. So I think that's another aspect.
Did Criminal Minds foresee 2020?
Apparently. Oh my god. Did Criminal Minds predict 2020? Please discuss. No, but because the reviews were mixed, mostly positive. Like, I think the skaters had fun predominantly with the cardboard cutouts and the fake cheering sounds, which were also a thing that we can get into. But I personally think that if I skated out there and I was met with, like, the glossy black plastic eyes of a bunch of plushies, I would not be happy about it.
Yeah, it might be too much. Might be too much. Like, all together would be creepy. I could see that being a thing. You know, I do think the skaters, for the most part, did seem to have a good time with the audience and the environment, and were just, you know, the overwhelming sentiment was that they were all happy to just be able to do it in whatever way. But I did love that Gracie Gold was like, yeah, actually, it was really creepy. The eyes followed you around the rink, and it reminded me of being clinically depressed. And it was just like, it was one of those things that I don't know her personally, and I've never spoken to her. I can sense, like, fellow depressed person dark humor when I see it. So I assume she was being kind of cheeky, and I laughed really hard, but I hope that she wasn't serious in terms of, like, it was a depressing and awful experience.
I don't think she again, I don't know her. We've never spoken. But I don't think she would say that if she was actually really distressed by the setup.
I mean, her interviews are always really funny and, like, sarcastic. So I just, like, assumed it was kind of a, I don't know.
We're gonna get to Gracie, but not in this episode.
We will, but not in this episode.
Because we are feminists, and we are going to talk about the boys first, the men, the gentlemen who did compete, just because we, you know what, I'm gonna be honest with our audience, we rolled a die, because we wanted to talk about everyone, and we let the dice decide which group of people we talk about first. So welcome to Boys.
It was predominantly an American event. I guess we should explain sort of how it worked compared to how a usual Grand Prix works. This is how I explained it to my mom's boyfriend, who politely asked me what was going on. And I will, which is that it's usually the Grand Prix is like a seeded tournament. And now obviously you can't just put people wherever you want. So it's kind of more just based on where you train, and people predominantly train close to home. So in a lot of ways it kind of is like a mini nationals, but it's like, rather than who you represent as a country, it's where you train. And a lot of times that's the same. So in this case for the men, all the men were American except Keegan Messing, he skates for Canada. He's sort of, I don't know what his exact citizenship status is, but he lives in Alaska and like skates and like trains there. So he was competing in this country.
And
as
also
well.
Alexei Pechenko and Daniel Samahin, both of whom skate for Israel but train in the US. It was a fun selection. It was a very fun group of skaters that I was very excited to be seeing. I think going into this, there was a part of me which was like, oh, this is going to be weird and upsetting and there's going to be no audience and it's not the same. And we kept being reminded by commentary and stuff that it's not the Grand Prix we were used to and all of that. But looking at the list, the more like closer we got to the event and stuff, the more I was extremely excited. I would look at a name and just be like, oh my God, he's going to be there. That's great for like everyone. So it was a very good, very good group of men.
It was. And usually for the Grand Prix, we will do just the podium. I think we're going to do like podium plus honorable mentions just because it is kind of a limited Grand Prix series this year and we have a little bit more time to talk about everyone we want to talk about.
We want to give everyone their flowers. Everyone deserves mentions and commentary. Yeah. And fine.
It's true. Cool. Okay, so who came in third place, Netta?
In third place, representing Canada, we have Keegan Messing. Man, myth, legend, icon, star.
He had a good weekend. He brought back both of his programs from last year, which we're not complaining because they both are great.
He looked so good. We're getting close to 2 years on this podcast, which first of all is insane. But I keep saying that when Keegan is on and like really, really, really skating, because he has, you know, he's sometimes not the most consistent jumper and sometimes he stresses me out. When he's on, it's so incredible to behold, and he just had a really good time.
It really was for me like echoes of two seasons ago, because obviously last season he was going through an awful family tragedy and like that was the talk of the town, and you know, rightly so. It was like the narrative wasn't even about like his skating career or Canada or whatever. It was literally about like a personal triumph over tragedy and whatnot. So now that he, not that that goes away and it's like, oh, it's been a year now, no one's sad anymore. Like, I know personally that's not true, but I think that it reminded me of when we would watch him two seasons ago. And it was just about like Keegan going out to skate his best and be a contender. And yeah, that was what we were watching for. And he really was quite on. I was really impressed. And I really, it's funny, I, at the beginning of last year, was kind of like, oh, Ed Sheeran, is this going to be, you know, I mean, there's something about like the wife guy-ness of it all. It's like a little bit cheesy. And, but it just, he sells it so well. And it's, I'm really happy that he still loves his wife this much, even like over a year later, that it's still hitting in that exact same way.
I have come all the way around on this song. And that happened last year. I've spoken about it many times, but at this point, I have a Pavlovian response to this song where it just moves me in a way that I wish an Ed Sheeran song was not moving me. But I, you know, when he skates out with his beautiful champagne colored, beautiful button up, it is just so romantic and he's so in love and you can tell and it's beautiful and just makes me cry. I've been playing the piano using this like piano app, which makes you learn how to play. And it made me play that song.
You should ask them to sponsor us.
Oh my God,
us.
If you would like to Simply Piano, please. I've been having so much fun. I'm halfway through Intermediate 2. Please help me.
Netta practices every day and they're the perfect student you have to sponsor. Sorry, that sounded like a threat. You don't have to do anything you don't
want to
do.
Yeah, that's valid, but also give us money. No, but it made me play that song a while back. And I'm not a good pianist, but just like playing the first couple of chords, I was like, oh my God, Keegan. And then I would just like be upset even though he's not skating and Ed Sheeran's not singing. And it's just me. butchering this song in the piano, and I was still like, oh, this is so beautiful. So I've been converted.
I think, and this is, you know, it's a skating podcast and we should, you know, talk about the skating more than I'm about to. But I just want to say that something that I think the reason behind this, I've been thinking about this, is because sometimes when a song is like really cheesy romantic, or has like very vague sweeping lyrics, I'm kind of like, this is dumb and boring. But when you associate it with a specific couple that you think is really cute, it all of a sudden is cute. Cause I'm like, I don't want to hear about Ed Sheeran, like what Ed Sheeran wants in a woman. I don't want to talk about like, oh, I found a girl who's beautiful and sweet. Oh, really? You like girls who are beautiful and sweet? How fucking original, Ed Sheeran. But then I'm like, okay, but Lane is adorable. And so I just picture her like in the stands, like cheering on Keegan, and he's like, I love you. It just is so cute.
Oh, I love love so much.
I really do love love, but I like specific people's love and not Ed Sheeran. I don't know what he's done to offend
me. This is an anti-Ed Sheeran episode. This is an anti-Ed Sheeran podcast.
I don't know, man. But listen, the November Rain free skate. Now, somebody else in this did November Rain, and I can't remember who it was. It was one of the younger guys. But the fact, first of all, that we got to hear November Rain twice.
The fact that Keegan has managed to make November Rain a cool song to skate to in 2020. I mean, it is a banger, but like, I don't think anyone would have thought of putting it on international stage before him last year at this point in history.
Yeah, and his cut of it.
Impeccable.
His cut is superior, I think. It's hard to get a bad cut of November Rain, but I think the reason it's good is because he leaves it alone for the most part. Because it naturally has like a really hype progression anyway. And then he lets the like real like guitar solo be the kind of like, this is where I'm going to pop off and do the last like third of my program, choreo sequence, spins, whatever. Yeah. Like, I think that's the correct choreo for that.
Absolutely. I was on live tweeting duty when we were watching the event. And I think at some point I just tweeted in all caps, snow in his hair. Yes.
Yeah, that was the when I remember back to Keegan Skate America, that's the image, is when he hydroplaned so low that the snow got all up in his hair. I was like, oh my God. Like, at what point is a hydroblade just a fall? Like,
I mean, he kept moving. Because
it was so controlled that it was definitely not, but like.
No, and I know that he did it in practice as well, because I think it was Jackie or someone tweet, like, about practice and about this extremely low hydroblade. So I think it's just a part of the act now. Is we get snowy here.
He's just like kind of one of a kind. Just his overall carriage, and part of it too is I think kind of his physique in a way, but like the way he holds himself, the way he moves on the ice. Like, I can't think of anyone else who really does it like he does, because he's not like a waifish graceful Yuzu, and he's not like a swaggy kind of Nathan or
oh yes,
like,
the two genders.
Those are the two genders. He doesn't have that like stiff, upright, like 90s man kind of skater thing either, though. It's a very like, he's kind of a short king. I mean, most of them are, but like, he kind of, it's like short king energy, right? It's like, I'm a little bit like of a smaller guy, and I've got like a hell of a lot of charm, and
he's
like,
just a showman. Old Hollywood, he like glam.
Is he the greatest showman?
He is the greatest showman, but don't let him know that, because he will get horrible ideas for programs, and we don't need that.
I think the real greatest showman is the friends we made along the way. No, I think the real greatest showman is the man who knows that he doesn't have to skate to greatest showman to put on the greatest showman. Exactly. So Keegan Messing, we love you. And if I may be saucy for a moment, and I may be a little spicy and put out a take on my own podcast, I really believe that Keegan should have gotten silver.
Amen.
And in a competition that was not like America, mostly Americans in America, he probably would have.
I absolutely agree. And we'll get to that, because we'll talk about Vincent, who, spoiler alert, got silver next. I absolutely agree. In terms of just performance quality and personal preference, and what I can tell you more
about. And who's got deeper edges and more beautiful spins than Keegan? Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think sometimes, because I'm not a technical specialist, I measure performance based on how much I can tell you about, like, this performance a couple of weeks after it's happened. And the I think I can tell you more about what I've experienced watching Keegan and what I remember from his skate than Vincent's, who was, again, silver. But again, that's also personal preference.
Keegan did bring us his own flair to the Kiss and Cry. He brought the cowboy hat, and I'm just glad that we got a little tiny bit of something in the Kiss and Cry, aside from, like, people fumbling with their masks and their tissue cases and their hand sanitizer. It was nice to have a piece of the old world tradition of the cowboy hat. The old world tradition. What the fuck am I talking about? I sound like I'm describing pasta sauce.
We didn't even say, but skaters were not allowed to have their coaches in the Kiss and Cry just because of, like, distancing and stuff. So it was a lonely experience. It brought me back to exactly a year ago of Shoma by himself, no coach, accepting the Kiss and Cry. He truly was a visionary, because now that's everyone.
Shoma by himself sounds like a young adult novel.
Maiko in the bathroom, but it's Shoma by himself.
So yeah, in second place with the silver medal was one Mr. Vincent Joe, who I will say has been through a lot of changes in the past year.
Yeah.
Like, he did a semester at Brown and then left, and I kind of don't blame him, because we were literally just talking before we started recording about, like, what we would do if we were college students during these times, trademark. And I mean, that's not why he left. He left so he could focus on skating. But, you know, I think there's that. And he changed coaches a bunch and has been traveling all over the world. And now that's not, you know, viable. So it's been kind of a coming of age time for young Vince, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I think he's been finding what works for him, which is good and exciting. It was interesting because it felt like so long since we've seen him skate for some reason. I mean, it's because it has been. And it was, I don't know, I had a weird time, especially with his short, because it was the first time we were seeing him back. It was like, oh my God, right. He does this. He's a part of this. And it's been so long.
The Grand Prix has almost, like, never been his strongest part of the season.
Yeah.
As far as I remember, because last season he took it off, if I remember correctly, because he was getting used to college. And then the season before that, he kind of beefed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Again, I feel like he just didn't do as well during the Grand Prix season. And then he, you know, came back to do really well at Worlds, obviously. So it's, you know, he could be a late in the season, late bloomer in general. And yeah, you know, the costume situation was interesting, I will say. There was sort of a romp him moment happening. A jumpsuit with, like, a ruched bottom situation.
You know what, though? For his short program, I don't think it's a jumpsuit. I believe it's a two-piece, and it's just a very well-made, very seamless two-piece. I think, like, as he was getting off the ice or something, there was a shot where I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, it's not actually a jumpsuit. It's just, like, very well made and it looks like it. I do appreciate the effort to bring back more. We saw it kind of last year with Shoma a little bit. I do firmly believe that we should be bringing jumpsuits back for male figure skaters a lot. So I do appreciate that.
I would agree with that. And I think it did remind me of Shoma. To me, it was, like, a less successful Shoma, but, like, that ain't that the way with trends, right? It's usually hard to, like, top the original. I think I'm not, like, the biggest fan of Vincent skating, and I don't think that's, like, a surprise to anybody. You know, we on this show have taken some issue with his alleged personal politics, and also just, like, you know, is it fun to watch him skate? Maybe not as much as some other people. I was surprised to see him fall. I haven't seen him fall in so long. I know that's, like, such a basic thing to say, but he's been so consistent at when he's skated.
It's always surprising when someone, and we'll talk about it as well when we get to Nathan, but it's always surprising when someone that you're used to being extremely consistent with jumps, especially beefs something, which obviously happens to everyone. Like, every single person will have some sort of mistake at some point. But with Vincent, I was like, wow, it's truly been, I don't even remember the last time.
Something I'm trying to put my finger on with Vincent is, like, is he not nearly self-aware enough, or is he too self-aware, or somehow both at the same time?
In which respect?
Well, because I think that he lacks self-awareness in terms of, like, how he presents himself, and, like, there seems to be a disconnect between, like, what he thinks he looks like on the ice versus, like, what I'm seeing on the ice, just in terms of, like, it does come off kind of try hard, like, I'm acting so hard with my body and my face, and it's like, all right, I can see that. And also with his, like, offstage, like, giving interviews kind of persona, he comes off as very self-absorbed. Like, I think he was one of the only skaters that I saw, especially compared to Keegan and Nathan in the press conference, who rather than, you know, talking about the world situation and how privileged they are and how lucky they are to just be able to skate, he was very, like, still in, like, you know, hustle mode, kind of. He's very, like, hustle mode kind of guy, right? Who, like, talks about, like, rise and grind, you know?
I had promised myself that I was only going to be very positive on the podcast this season, just because we're so lucky to be getting any of it. But I do want to talk about that. And I was hesitant because, whatever, we don't know him. We don't know what his deal is. He might be the nicest person out there and we wouldn't know. I was bothered by the transcriptions I did see from press conferences where truly, like, a lot of the conversation was about the situation that the world finds itself in, both pandemic and inequality and politics-wise. And, you know, Keegan and Nathan both gave very nice, graceful responses about their situation versus the world and all of that. And then you have Vincent out here who's just being like, oh yeah, I think what I did is like Olympic level good and I'm just like doing this thing because it's like incredible. And it's like, sir, read the room.
Yeah, that was the way he said this is an Olympic program. I was like, honey, we don't even know if the Olympics are happening ever again, son. Like, what world do you live in?
Yeah, also, I don't care who you are, you don't get to say that for a thing that you just did. Like, you could be, I'm trying to think of a different category or something, you could be singer, like you could be Adele and you have a new song and you're singing it in front of a huge arena of people who are there because the pandemic doesn't exist in this alternate universe. You don't get to go off stage and be like, oh yeah, I think this is a Grammy worthy performance. Like, you don't. That's for other people to say.
Well, so yeah, and the thing is that I'm pretty sure, like, giving him the benefit of the doubt, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly, the context was that he was saying that to compliment the choreography and say this is, like, an Olympic caliber program in terms of, like, choreography. But I still, it still, for the same reasons, doesn't sit right. Because even though if the intention was to compliment, it's still, I mean, you know, to use your example, like, if Adele was singing a song that, like, somebody else wrote and was like, this is a Grammy song, it's still, like, you don't say
it's
that, Adele.
It's Josh Ferris for his short and Misha Ge for his free.
Who we both think are, like, we say all the time how we think both of the, they're two of the best choreographers in the biz. So it's, like, obviously no shade against them.
Yeah, no, it's not about, it's not even, I'm not even impressed that someone said that. If, like, a commentator or some different athlete or any of the choreographers was like, you know what, that's an Olympic level program, I'd be like, you know what, that's valid. But when you're the person who's performing it, it feels like when someone tries to give themselves a nickname, it's like, honey, this is not for you to decide.
Okay, but this is, like, exactly what I was saying, though, is that I think it brings me back to my statement of, like, or is he too self-aware? Because he, and I understand this, I, too, am a person who unfortunately cares a lot about what people think of me and is always trying to, like, say it first. But, like, he always seems to talk about himself through the lens of, like, a narrative that he thinks people have about him. Like, oh, I don't want to just be Nathan Chen too, or I don't want to just be the guy who goes out there and does jumps and gets second to Nathan. Like, he says things like that all the time. And I'm like, who has told you that they say that? I've never, like, no one says that. And even if they do, like, don't worry about it. It's not your job to worry about how people perceive you, especially if you're an athlete. Just do your job and, like, do your best. And, like, don't even worry about how people talk to you or, I mean, how people talk about you or what they say. It seems like he's just trying so hard in interviews and media stuff to, like, stay ahead of whatever they want to say about him. And I get it, because it must be really scary and really unnerving to know that, like, narratives will be made about you. But I think, I wish somebody would just tell him that, like, he needs to let go of that, because it's backfiring and making him less likable.
Yeah, that's a very kind take to bring to this discussion after I've roasted this poor man.
I mean, look, obviously, here's the thing. It's on this program anyway, I mean, it's a good thing we're not judges, right? Because, like, we kind of judge the skater as a whole and, like, it, you know, in terms of, like, interactions we've had with them or, you know, interactions we've seen them have with other people or whatever. And so it's, like, we're bringing those experiences in. And so if we have this opinion of Vincent that, like, he comes off as kind of unpleasant in interviews and he may or may not have bad politics or whatever, of course we have, like, a certain taste in our mouth about it. And if somebody who we really, really stand, like, gave this same performance and maybe this was like the best performance of their career and it was a huge step up for them, we would maybe be really stoked about the same thing. But like, no. Isn't that kind of the thing
about sports? Well, yeah, but also here's like, I agree. And I think when we talk about skaters that we don't particularly personally like, because obviously we don't like everyone, that'd be insane. I try to, at least when it comes to just quality of performance, keep things to just what I've seen at this particular performance. However, you just, like, you said it yourself. If this was the best performance of someone's life to this date and we're seeing it, and, you know, the jumps were there mostly and they were beautiful and the choreo was awesome and blah, 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 of course we'd be excited about it. But again, it's the balance of, like, this is his level. It's not a new level for him. And we don't need to keep being excited about it, you know?
Totally. I think, like, if he went out and gave a performance that I genuinely thought was, like, holy shit, he's broken through some barriers, he's all of a sudden, like, a whole different skater. Like, I like to think that we have built up enough of a respect on this podcast, or enough of a reputation on this podcast, that we show that we can have that reaction to skaters, because we do that all the time. We come around to skaters all the time. Like, if you listen back, I just think, like, because I'm the same way, Netta, is, like, I really don't ever want to be negative, and I feel like it would be more entertaining if we were really mean, and we were like, fuck this guy, but, like, that's just not who we are.
Yeah, welcome to the roast of Nathan Chen. Let me tell you mean things. No one needs that. World's garbage enough.
Yeah, like, it's not good. I think that's, like, cheap, lazy comedy, and I don't think it's even that funny. So, you know, it's possible that I could... It was actually more possible that I would meet Vincent Joe before he left Brown. Now it's like, well, we don't live in the same city anymore. But in the alternate timeline where he stayed and we ended up having coffee and, like, I'd get to know him and be like, oh, he's a nice kid. Like, sure. But I don't know. I think that we're kind of doing the thing that I'm accusing him of doing, where I'm, like, getting ahead of potential criticism that I'm, like, not allowed to have opinions.
We do that a lot, actually, but, I mean, that gets into a bigger conversation because both of us were socialized as female, and we get into a whole conversation where all of our opinions are prefaced by that's just my opinion, and bear in mind you don't have to agree, and of course it's just personal opinion, but anyway, on my own show, here's some things that I'm going to say, which...
You know who wasn't socialized as female? Nathan Chen.
Oh, God, tier transition! Let's talk about Nathan Chen. It was not... See, the thing is, this is one of the things. If anyone else in the world came out and did what he did, I would be so blown away and would be like, what has happened to this other fictional skater? When Nathan has a couple of pops and not everything goes 100% as planned, even though he wins, even though he's... under 1 point away from breaking 300, it's still like, he's like, yeah, I won, but this was not great. Which is about, you know, perspective and nuance and all of that.
Yeah, I was alone when I was watching all of it, except the very, very end of the men's free, and my mom and her boyfriend came home, and my mom is deeply invested in Nathan Chen at this point. She did, like, the full, like, Arrested Development Gene Parmesan scream when he came on the screen. And her boyfriend, like, knows that we care about figure skating but doesn't really know about it and doesn't like to watch people fall. So he just, like, stayed in the other room. But he was trying to figure out, like, what was going on. And we were like, oh, my God, he might not break 300. What's going to happen? It was wild. And in a field where Vincent is scoring really high and in a field where Keegan is giving his very best performance, it was close and dangerous. And I think I'm curious about what that would do to Nathan, like, psychologically, to have a close call like that in a way that I don't think he has in a long time, even when he's been up against Yuzu.
I think it's a good, like, reminder. And he did kind of speak to that in press conference and interviews as well, about the fact that it's never guaranteed that, you know, he's going to show up and he's going to win. And that is a narrative that has been built that I think every single person who knows who Nathan Chen is kind of guilty of. Because you look at this roster and you're kind of like, yeah, he's probably going to win, given who's there. And I think a close call like this makes things very interesting because it's a reminder that regardless of your track record, regardless of your skill, regardless of what you've done for like seasons and seasons now, you can always have a slightly worse day while someone's having a exceptionally good day, and it's still...
Yeah, and I don't ever want anybody to fail or do less than their best. Like, truly, I always want to see everyone do their best, but like, it does make it interesting when somebody who's completely untouchable for the past several years has a little bit of an oopsie, even if it is just, oh no, I, you know, a couple things popped or whatever. Really interesting. I also realized that in all of our like Vincent discourse, we didn't really talk about his programs, which isn't really fair. I don't really remember what the first one was.
It's Vincent is what it is.
Wait, okay, then I'm sorry. We are rewinding. The fact, okay, so I can't believe I forgot that. I think sometimes things are so funny that I like black out and then forget about them right after. So I need to talk about that because apparently it had been like announced that that was what he was doing. And again, if I knew that, I laughed so hard I blacked out and forgot, because when that fucking song started, I cannot even describe to you the noises that came out of my body. Like, I was like full scream, wheeze, like weeping. It was truly one of those surreal moments in life where I just didn't know what to do with myself.
Did you experience so much joy?
I think I saw moment? God.
What if you go to heaven? I saw Taffy Holiday.
Taffy wasn't there, but I think I saw her in that moment. Listen, I enjoy that song. I think there are covers of it that are good. I like the James Blake cover, which you should look up if you haven't heard it. I like the, is it originally Jim Croce or Don Fogelberg? I confuse them a lot.
It's
like very like serious XM radio, The Bridge channel that plays like basically like Fleetwood Mac and like Simon and Garfunkel. I'm very into it. But I like the song. Oh, poor Josh Groban. You know, it's right for Vincent in that it's so earnest in a way that it feels a little artificial and like not actually.
Wow. Yeah. Also, this is going to sound so mean, and I don't mean it to sound mean. And also, knowing art history, Western art history, is not a prerequisite for being a nice person. And also, it's slightly classist to assume that it is. However, I'm not convinced that Vincent Jeune knows who Vincent van Gogh is, because he was talking about this choice in something that I saw on the internet. And he was like, yeah, this song came up on my Spotify, like, suggestions, and I saw my name and it just spoke to me, and I'm like, son, honey.
Okay, I have a lot of things I need to say about this. First of all, it's so funny to me that, like, maybe this is not how this works. Lord knows I don't understand algorithms. The idea that Spotify would be like, hey, that's your name, why don't you give it a listen? It just tickles me. You might like this because it's you.
I mean, it's either that or he listens to a lot of Josh Groban in his free time.
If you can show me a male skater who does not have their algorithm screwed up by Josh Groban's, I mean, look. Okay, the song is about, like, a man who, like, no one appreciated it. No one appreciated it enough. They were too blind to see it, Vincent. I wouldn't tell everyone that you related to that, personally. I think that's...
Also, Van Gogh's life is so complex and very vastly misunderstood by a lot of people. Like, the narrative, we keep coming back to narratives around people. The narrative around Vincent Van Gogh has changed a lot, and it keeps changing. There's many discussions about what actually happened to him at the end of his life and all of that. It's fascinating. Look it up. Just read about him. I think aligning yourself with the protagonist of this song, I think it's just a wild take. I think it's expanding everything else we were saying about Vincent. It's like seeing yourself as the main character in such a specific way.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's just funny
to skate to a song that is your name, and that's the end. Like, that's it. Like, I'm sorry. Like, okay, wait. Also, though, Piper and Paul's Vincent is iconic, and I feel like we give it a break for a little bit. That one, how could you ever top that? You know, give it a little break.
Yeah.
Who else skated to songs with their name? Someone else did, right?
Emmanuel Savory.
Yeah, that would be fucking weird if Emmanuel Savory was like, I skated to this song because I identify with the protagonist because that song's about Jesus.
It is I, the second coming of Jesus Christ. I'm here to ice skate.
Listen, if the second coming of Jesus Christ is Emmanuel Savory, I'm okay with that. But as I think...
You know what? Actually, yeah.
He's the son of a preacher man, and I don't want to put words in his mouth that are blasphemous, so whatever.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's meant with respect.
What if Mariah Bell skated to Mariah Carey? What if Jimmy Ma skated to Hey Ma?
I was like, are you going to say, like... A Jimmy singer? Like, no, Hey Ma.
Hey Ma. I stand by that. Jason Brown can skate to Brown Eyed Girl.
Jason Brown can skate to Jason Derulo.
Jason Brown. There is an alternate universe where Jason Brown and Jason Derulo... Everything's the same, but Jason Brown and Jason Derulo have swapped lives. I firmly believe this. Brady Tanell can skate to the Brady Bunch.
That's actually a great concept.
Just think about it. Just think about it. We may be opening like a real Pandora's box here.
What if someone does an ice show, we produce an ice show where the only prerequisite is that you skate to a song with your name in it?
I think that that's a lot of money in the bank for us. No one steal that idea, TM, 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 TM. Even though I just stole that bit from my brother.
From the McElroys.
The levels here.
It's fine.
Listen, the other thing I want to say about Vincent's programs before we get back to Nathan is it's a real bold choice to be like, I'm doing Muse again. Because then at that point, yeah. Muse is your brand. You're the Muse guy. And Muse is so high drama that it's like, you need to like bring so much to it in order for it to not overpower you. And I guess I feel like he's not bringing enough to it for me to feel like that music choice is earned.
It might also be like early in the season and also the weird distortion of stakes by not having an audience of human persons.
That's also true. The geckos could have thrown him off his game. Like, we don't even know. I've never skated for geckos. I can't speak to that.
Yeah, it might be a very specific, weird experience. Let's talk about Nathan. This was about Nathan.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, to hop back to Nathan, Nathan's a skater who my primary criticism of him in the past couple seasons has been that he doesn't add in the like spice and seasoning of emotion to his skates until later in the season. And this is the first time that I've seen him come out the gate with like a story to tell in both programs. I really hope that the technical bobbles don't deter him from that direction, because I know that he had said that he was really focusing on the emotion of them, and I hope it's not like a, oh no, I should have focused less on that and more on the jumps. Like, I don't want him to lose that. Let's talk about the programs, because they both have such emotional intensity. Like, they're so good.
Both of them are my favorite. They're both great. Also, just really quickly about his mishaps, I follow someone on Twitter who was like, it's just a testament to his skill that when Nathan pops jumps, he pops them into doubles.
That's true.
Like, there is not a single, there were no singles in this thing, and we're like, oh no, it was so distressing. But yeah, his short this year is Canción del Mariachi, choreographed by Shailen Bourne. And it claps and slaps so extremely hard.
It claps and slaps so hard that you can feel it all the way in the future. And the people called us from the future and they were like, what was that clapping and slapping that we heard? And we were like, it was Nathan Chen.
Back when the challenge, the points challenge thing was happening, I sent my dad a video of Nathan doing his short program because I know he likes that song. And I wasn't even sure if he'd watched it, because, you know, sometimes you send people like a 4-minute video and they're like, there's no way that's happening. And then like a day later, I heard him in the kitchen making coffee and scream singing this song. I was like, okay, it worked. He did enjoy it. And then I asked him and he was like, yeah, that was great.
I mean, the way that Nathan is just so committed to doing something so different every single time. And I'm not saying that there's like, you know, I mean, I think that there's merit to repeating things too. Sometimes, I mean, we had nothing but positive things to say about Keegan, who did the same exact things he did last year. But I think it's like, you're Nathan, you're on top of your game, and yet you still say, how can I do a completely different genre every single time? that to me is like just really exciting. And he brought that sassiness. He brought that sauce. Like the short program is so, I don't know. It's, I don't want to be like, oh, it's like sussy in Latin. Cause it's like, all right, well, come up with something else to say. That's not like that, but
it's just fun. And it's very like, it's so like not what we've seen from him, which I think is what makes it exciting. Aside from the simple fact that that song slaps extremely hard and is just great. Yeah, I think it's just like a different kind of fun vibe.
It's maturity. Like, remember back when he was doing Caravan and we would always be like, it's like somebody cast a magic spell on a nerd and he like got to be like sexy, but it was like over the top silly, you know? And it's like this time it's like, no, he owns it. Like he is like, he's like 20. So I'm like trying not to go to jail here. But like he is a person who like has more of like a mature, handsome guy kind of attitude now. And that's something that he's able to pull off more.
Handsome boy energy.
Yeah, like straight faced, I think.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like more like unironically in this program. And it's working really well because, you know, he does come off as like more mature than he did when he was like a teen a few years ago.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's how growing up in a linear timeline works.
I wouldn't know because I grew up in a non-linear timeline and I didn't start getting piercings and tattoos and dyeing my hair till I was like 30. So
that's valid of you. There's something else I really enjoy about this program in particular is this quality that I still don't have a name for, but I've mentioned it before with people like Jimmy Ma and Keegan, is this, and now Nathan with this one program in particular, is the idea of, oh, I have a thing to show you, hold on. Mm-hmm. And like the wink to the audience with it. Kind of also like his choreo sequence last year, the Benny and the Jets choreo sequence, which like obviously slaps and we all know and love it. But I think this entire skate carries that energy of like, oh, I'm about to do some real bullshit. It's going to be real cool, which I always enjoy in a performance.
Yeah, and we've always said, you know, Nathan is very clearly a skater who thrives under really high stakes, high pressure environments. And this probably didn't feel that way because there's no audience. And who has a context for, you know, it feels like practice, but it's on TV and it's real, you know, I guess it shouldn't be that surprising that he didn't, you know, pull out the world's most amazing performances. But, you know, again, I think like the emotion and the showmanship was there, which for what it was, especially this year, I'm like happy to see it. And the free skate, as like a big Phil Glass stan, I was like very stoked about that.
Oh, it's so good. It's once again a Shaylin. And it's so good. And also that blue, is it like a royal, the vibrant, beautiful blue blouse situation?
Yeah, it's a little bit basic.
I hope and pray he doesn't change it.
It is a little close to the whole like jewel tone blouse I'm giving my senior musical theater recital thing that we tend to rag on.
But it was a fun blouse. It's like the Mandarin collar and it doesn't button all the way down.
Yeah, it's the collar that saves it. It's a really cool choice to have the Mandarin collar.
Yeah, last year I was helping Queer Eye, one of my friends who's a boy who wanted me to go shopping with him. I was his personal tan France and it was great and it was so much fun. And one thing that we talked about was, like, button-ups. And he was like, I only wear, like, flannel and button-ups because I know how to style them and it's easy. And I was like, consider, you get rid of a color or you do some nice color blocking or you have a shirt which is not actually a button-down and it only has three buttons or something. And it immediately looks interesting and it looks like you know what you're doing, which is what's happening with this blouse here. And I hope he doesn't change it and I'm afraid he will.
Yeah, he does tend to change things. But, you know, we didn't want him to change the bus seat shirt and then he got the, like, highlighter shirt. So sometimes things have to change in order to give way to better things.
To get more neon.
To get more neon. To get more Vera Wanged up.
Vera Wanged up.
What else do I want to say about Nathan? I think the way he conducted himself in the press conference was, like, just so admirable. Just he made sure every step of the way to, like, be like, I am not the one like suffering here. Like, I mean, I'm lucky I get to compete, but like there are people in the world who are not athletes who are having a worse time. And like even on the NBC coverage, like Terry Gannon was like, okay, well, you've mentioned that, you know, obviously, you know, you have a certain amount of privilege, but like, how's it been for you? And he didn't even take the bait. He was like, again, it's not that bad. I'm fine.
It's that, and I also was very impressed because I think for reasons that we can't possibly know or discuss, he in one of the press conferences, he spoke out about how during quarantine and stuff, he's been educating himself and learning about privilege and the different kinds of injustices that different people experience in the world, very much alluding to the summer that, especially like, I guess, America has had with protests and, you know, Black Lives Matter and all of that. And I don't want to say political because we're not talking politics, we're talking human rights. But I think this is the most connected with the world I've seen a press conference about figure skating get. Like, I think the sport usually exists more or less as a little bit of a bubble, and people's personal politics or beliefs or morals don't tend to make their way into press conferences and all of that. So I appreciated that. And it was done in a way which was not self-congratulatory or...
Yeah, if anything, it was like the opposite, where he kind of framed it like, oh, just for the first time, I'm starting to do this stuff. And like, I kind of feel like that's not true because he's always been very like, you know, aware of issues going on and like very well-spoken and studying lots of different things at Yale. So like, if anything, it was just really humble. I don't know, I think he raises the bar for me on, I guess, the level of awareness. Yeah, he kind of raises the bar on like social awareness because I think we typically say, well, we defend skaters a lot on this program because I don't think it's really fair to like really come at people who were raised in a bubble essentially and who only focused on one thing and probably didn't go to regular school in the same way that the rest of us did or what have you. And I stand by that. Like, I think that it's, I don't think you can expect very young people who were raised in a very specific single-minded setting to have the same amount of knowledge that like full-grown liberal arts educated adults have. But then like the fact that Nathan is bringing that level of, like discourse to the table, it's nice to just have at least one skater that I don't have to be like, okay, well, obviously I wish that he said something different, but you know, he's got a very different life than I do and whatever.
Yeah. But then again, that also speaks to his privilege, which I'm sure he would point out in this particular situation because he is an Ivy League educated person with access to resources who has the time and ability to be self-educating.
There you go.
It's a very complex issue. Should we take a break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome to the break.
Yeah, welcome to the break.
Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the break. What do we want to tell you? What do we usually tell you in the break? Patreon exists. We did a super fun thing for Halloween where you, spoiler alert, get to see our faces. We did a video thing for Halloween. It was super cute. And if you want to get in on that, you can, as usual, join the majestic people who keep the lights on for us and contribute to some great causes.
I believe we released that particular one to everybody, all the different tiers. Usually only the $5 and up tiers get the bonus episodes, but this one was our 1 year anniversary of being on Patreon, so we released it to everyone. And so if you get on the Patreon train now and you give as little as $1 a month, that's still amazing, and you get in on this fun Halloween video episode.
Yeah, so get in on that. It's super fun and low stakes and a complete distraction from the world. So, you know, make your own conclusions. Stop by. Also, I did want to say that something you can do to support us for absolutely free, which is also super important, is to give us 5 stars on your preferred app for consuming a podcast. The purple icon on your iPhone or Stitcher or whatever your equivalent is, it's super helpful. It lets people know that we're fun and that we're worth listening to. And it also makes my day when I check reviews.
Yeah, you can leave us a review. You can leave us 5 stars. Those are the only two options, actually. It's just either leaving us 5 stars or not doing it. They will tell you that
someone left us 3 stars but did it for the bit, and I appreciated that and I laughed so hard, but at the same time it does break the algorithm, and we're all slaves to the algorithm. So now I need people to do a real fun bit where you give us 5 stars.
It'll be so funny. We'll laugh so hard and we'll be like, who gave us 5 stars? That comedy legend, they're gonna put us out of a job by being so fucking funny.
Yeah, I think that's all we have to do for a break, right?
Yeah, I think so. All right, well, thank you for listening. We're gonna dump you back out into the wild, raging, stormy sea of men. That was the weirdest thing I've ever said. I'm so sorry.
Shall we do some honorable mentions? The rest of the incredible, magnificent men who were at this event.
Yeah, we absolutely should. In no particular order, to be honest. Who else was there? You know, we got a shout out, Alexei Bachenko, who I still feel uncomfortable calling uncle or grandpa or daddy.
Yeah, I'm not. No.
No.
Well. I don't think I can call him grandpa because he's literally like 5 years older than me.
He is older than me, which is rare, but because very few people on earth are older than me. But
no, I think he's fantastic and I enjoy everything he's been. He also recycled programs from last year, and I'm super thrilled with that because I think both of his programs are so good and fun. Nothing makes me as feral as Pirates of the Caribbean. It like just makes me want to fucking go. I don't know where, probably to a ship. It's not even my favorite like movie series or anything. It was never like a phase I went through, but it is just the score is so good. And just like him and his full cosplay just doing the thing. Outstanding. So good.
That's what we were like texting this while we were watching is like, name a better movie score than Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, can you? Because it's tempting to be like, yeah, of course it's not the best one of all time because it's not the best movie of all time. I don't think anybody's going to say that. I mean, it's entertaining, but it's not like, you know, whatever. I was never that into them either. I thought they were fine, good popcorn movies, whatever. I just cannot think of a score that is like that fucking good.
It just hits the mood and the aesthetic so correct. It's so good. And I think his, because there have been a lot of very good and deeply iconic heavy pirates in the past, but I think that something that Alexei Bachenko really achieves with his skate is like the absolutely unhinged pirate energy that this score deserves. It's so good.
I think I'm going to tell my kids that Alexei Bachenko is Johnny Depp. What else? Speaking of Israel, Daniel Samoan was there. He once again did not have a great time, but I want to say that the NBC commentary about him from Tara and Johnny was so unbelievably disproportionately scathing that it was actually like the funniest part of the competition. Like,
oh no,
it was awful. I don't want anybody to have like mean commentary, but like I just have to laugh. It just, there's something, it kind of reminded me of like the way they treat Jerry on Parks and Rec, where it's like so disproportionately awful that you have to laugh.
I don't know, I enjoy Daniel. I don't think he's a bad skater. I don't think he deserves to be bullied.
Me neither. Like, I don't know why they hate him so much. It was like, the commentary situation in this event was not great because Ted wasn't there. Ted. Like, it was just, or like, PJ and Ted are like the only ones that I can really get behind, to be honest. I thought whoever was doing the ISU stream was a little too clinical and didn't seem to really like know or care about the individual narratives, take a shot, of the skaters and kind of just cared about people's chances at winning, which is not why everyone goes to those things. And Tara and Johnny are Tara and Johnny. Like, they just have the opinions that they have, and they're very much,
you're
like,
gonna tell you.
Team America, USA. Yeah, they're gonna tell you.
I think the women who commentate figure skating for Spanish TV should be commentating for everyone. I don't care that not everyone would understand them. I think their energy is outstanding, and I always enjoy when I'm like looking for a program on YouTube and I happen to find the Spanish commentary. It's always so good. I'm gonna have to find out their names because it's always deeply enjoyable. They're fun.
Yeah, let them do it.
Let us do it. We don't know shit. It's gonna be fun.
Let us do it. It's gonna be great. Who else do we want to talk about? We of course have to talk about Camden.
Oh my god, friend of the pod.
I always laugh when we say that because we talked to him once.
He's a personal friend.
He's going to be the best man at my wedding because we talked one time last year. He's our bestest friend, Camden. No, he's just a real sweetie. And he was hurt, which was really sad to see. So we couldn't throw out any quads. And, you know, it wasn't the best technical performance. But I thought that he brought his usual really, like artistically sensitive style to the ice. I thought his costumes were fantastic.
That pink blouse. The blouse king,
I mean, the blouse king comes through every time.
Blouse king has delivered once again. That blouse is dreamy. There's so much going on with, like, the lace-up situation at the collarbones and everything. It's so good.
I mean, heavy is the torso that wears the blouse. But I'm trying to say it's hard to be the blouse king. Must be pressure. He knows he's the blouse king because we told him. And yet he still manages to not crumble under the pressure, but rather like raise the bar every time. You have to admire. He also, in the free skate, I think he and Karen had the same color on. And I was like, skate prom, skate prom, skate prom.
I hope there's a picture somewhere of the two of them in their matching skate prom costumes.
I'm sure. Who else?
So many good people.
Jimmy Ma was there. It wouldn't be Skate America without Jimmy Ma. Come on.
I tweeted this, but I need to repeat because it's important to me. Nothing in this world will ever get my aesthetic as much as wearing a dark purple hoodie and skating to Linkin Park. It's the only mood. Like, truly. Yeah,
Jimmy gets it.
He gets it on a very specific level. Like, the vibes are just so correct.
I love that he always comes out to skate like a fucking prize fighter. Like, he's his own hype man. He brings, like, if you're gonna be kind of cocky, yeah, you need to do it like that. Be, like, full, like make it a thing. Make it your thing. I think that Jimmy has really succeeded in making it his thing in a way that it works really well for him. I think he, in the short program, okay, a little disappointing, and then the free skate, it's like he went out and, like, was it perfect? No, but you could almost see that moment that he had with himself where it's like, all right, get it together. You know, like, I've had that moment with myself where I've been doing poorly at something, you know, a performance or whatever. And then you just kind of, like, almost, like, not literally, but, like, figuratively kind of slap yourself in the face and say, like, get the fuck together. You can do this. And then you get kind of mad and then you do it. And, like, he gave this amazing performance that was so raw and, like, had so much energy. It was really thrilling.
Yeah, I think this is kind of what I was gonna say as well. First of all, yes. And secondly, I think his free skate is one of those performances that, compared to, like, what we're talking about with, you know, Vincent and Nathan's performance and quality and all of that, was it the technically best thing that I've ever witnessed? No. But was it something that I was texting you and I was like, oh, he's here to fucking play. We're doing a whole thing. Because the performance aspect of it was so heightened. Because I knew that this was, like, an important skate for him and for me to be witnessing. And it was so good.
Yeah, I just was really, that was just, like, one of the highlights for me, to be honest. And, you know, speaking of good performers, we also had Alexei Krasnichon there.
Oh,
and he
God,
brought
yes.
back the vampire thing just in time for Halloween. And you simply love to see it.
That program is so good. It's, like, one of my favorites. I hope he never gets rid
remember
of it.
Remember when he did a quad loop and it looked so easy that no one believed that it was a quad? Do you remember that?
The quad loop discourse of 2020?
That he himself had to weigh in on and go, guys, it was a quad, lol. Like, iconic.
Can you imagine you land a beautiful, clean, impeccable quad loop and it's so good that you log onto Twitter and you expect everyone to be freaking out about it and everyone's like, actually, that was a triple. I would be pissed.
That's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, but he did so good. That was so good.
He really was.
Coming in fourth, just so close, just like doing so good and so beautiful, Tomoki Hiwatashi fucking delivered.
Tomoki.
Just so good.
I don't, you know, okay, so I watched it with the NBC commentary for most of the time, and I just don't understand people who aren't on the Tomoki hype train. Like,
How it's
a great train. How are you not? How are any? Is anyone not on the? I just all this to say that Tara and Johnny and Terry do not appear to be, like, fully on the Tomoki hype train, and that's a mistake.
If the Olympics ever happen again in, like, 8 years' time, this man will have an Olympic medal, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, and I will be saying it until the Olympics come back, and then every single commentator on NBC will wish that they had joined a trade earlier.
Yeah, and I want to say that I do think that what's exciting about Tomoki is that, of course, there's still room to improve and mature. He's obviously not, like, a fully mature skater yet. He's, you know, very young. But the maturity that we've seen from him, even in the last couple of seasons, I think is, like, really astounding how far he's come. Because I remember the very first episode that we did was U.S. Nationals 2019, and how we were, like, not fully on board the Tomoki train at that point because we thought he could bring more performance and showmanship. And I think he really has improved so much. And it's really clear to me because I think his Take 5 program, which I think is boring to do Take 5. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love you, Tomoki, but there's a million other songs. But whatever. That has a similar vibe to it as his Cry Me a River did. And in that it's kind of like a jazzy kind of moment. Yeah. And I think even just from then to now, he's carrying off that, like, jazz cool guy attitude so well.
I think he's just finding his niche, and, like, it's weird to say his voice because it's not physically his voice, but, like, the thing that works for him, and I think he's, like, honing it in, and he's beginning to be very dangerous because he has mind-blowing artistic skill, and the things he can do that are not just, you know, the good jumps and the good spins makes him a whole, like, complete performance package, which is so exciting. Yeah.
So, you know, I was really thrilled about that. You know, there were some youngsters there that we were like, who are you? Is it Ilya Malinin?
Did very good in the free skate, especially.
Real good.
He was fifth overall.
You look at him and you're like, oh, he's the future. Like, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's exciting.
The future. He's been skating to, like, a version of Billie Jean at these, like, small summer competitions, and every single time I, like, laugh my ass off because I'm like, what a fucking weird choice on every level. Like, of course the kid's not your son. You are a child.
Yeah, you're 14. You don't know what's happening.
Also, you don't need to say the kid is not your son. Like, that goes without saying.
I still think that he is skating from the point of view of the son.
Like, Michael Jackson is not my dad. He's just a guy. Oh, God, I can't.
Also, it's not even, like, the original, which would be a wildly weird choice, but it's, like, a raw indie cover of it, which is, like, dramatic.
Well, why does that exist? You know?
First of all, why does that exist? Secondly, how is that a thing that needs... how is this your story, Ilya? You're a child. Anything else? Because, like, skills wise he's insanely talented, for not just for his age, he's just very, very talented. I'm so excited to see where he goes, but I'm excited for, like, 3 years from now when he's grown and we're watching him and he's incredible, and really I'm excited to be like, God, remember when he did that fucking Billie Jean program?
Yeah, remember when? There were a few other young guys, too, that I feel like we should talk about.
Joseph Kang was there, whom I...
What a cutie.
Yeah, he was great. It's so exciting. Like, it's so exciting to start seeing the younger competitors, the younger, in this case, Team USA kids who get to do that. And I think, like, something that was kind of a conversation I think is going to come up with the girls as well is, obviously, this year is very different, and they would not have had Grand Prix assignments if things were normal, and some of them might be doing,
like, they would have been
Grand
in the
Prix's
junior Grand Prix
and all of that. But it's such an exciting opportunity for them to, like, have had this experience the way it was. Maxim Naumov as well was there.
Hey, speaking of friends of the pod, Andrew Torgashev was not there, but he did switch to training with Raf, which I thought was really cool news, and I'm really excited about that.
So excited. Hoping we get to see what that looks like for him sooner than later. Hoping we get to see him skate soon.
Yeah, and so I was going to say we could do a little social media corner. I feel like some cute things have happened. I was going to say, I know that we didn't get prom pictures per se from Camden and Karen, but we did get Halloween pictures, and they did dress up as a sushi chef and a soy sauce bottle, which I thought was very sweet.
Yeah, a good couple's costume.
I need you to walk me through what the fuck Morrissey did. I need you to talk to me about your Georgian boyfriend and how he blew himself.
Yeah, welcome to the Halloween corner. The levels of data performance art in that Instagram post. If you don't follow Georgian legend Morrissey Kvitalashvili on Instagram, you should. he posted just a series of insane pictures of himself with his face painted blue, just like lurking in his house.
Like, was he Blue Man Group?
No.
Or he was Blue Man Solo
Artist. He was just a blue thing. He was like, yeah, he was the Blue Man Solo Artist. His post essentially says, if I saw this in my house, I would be very scared.
So he really, like, thought about Halloween on a deeper level.
Yeah, he was like, so this is creepy.
What is fear?
Yeah, he was like, this is creepy and it would scare me if I saw it. And then he's like, do you know any other blue characters? He's not. Like, he's not, like, Mystique from X-Men or the Blue Man Group or, like, anything. He just painted himself blue and, like, squatted in his bathtub. And it's outstanding.
It's like a real deconstruction of Halloween. I appreciate that from an art school perspective. You know, I think I am now kind of stuck thinking about what would happen if one of the Blue Man Group men wanted to go solo.
He would be a blue solo man. Or he would go, like...
A blue man. Just one.
Or he would, like... No, because blue is a primary color. I was going to make a joke about how, like, if they split up, each one of them would be a different color. But blue is a primary color because they're meant to be a group.
That's, like, so deep. I bet that's what they meant when they did that. I'm looking at Instagram right now. I don't want to see people I know in real life. I want to see skaters. Come on now. Come on, show me what I want to see. I don't know. Have you seen anything interesting?
Adam Rippon was a WAP for Halloween.
I'm glad you brought that up because I knew someone was going to do it. And I was like, it's going to be someone who sucks and doesn't do a good job. And then it was Adam Rippon and he did a beautiful job. And I was so like, yes, if someone was going to do it, I'm glad it was Adam. I'm glad he got in the bathtub. I'm glad he like really saw it through, you know?
Yeah.
That was a nice Halloween surprise.
Yeah, that's like the, obviously there's always like the knee-jerk response of like, cis gay man is making the joke and the punchline is like, bodies with vaginas exist. But it wasn't that, and I'm very pleased.
I think that Johnny Weir has been on a Dancing with the Somethings.
Oh yeah, he's been Dancing with the Stars and he is still on it. You should vote for him. I'm not watching the whole thing, but I've been watching some of the performances.
I've never seen that show.
Oh my god, I love Dancing with the Stars, but I've not been watching the season. I don't even know who else is on it, but I've been watching some of his videos. And if you're in the US and you want to watch that and like send texts for him to support his Dancing with the Stars career, you should do that. I'm trying not to say vote. Yeah, vote for Johnny Weir on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, phone bank for Johnny Weir. This is probably going to be the conclusion of Social Media Corner.
Well, since we're talking about social media and wrapping up, look at this beautiful transition. Let's just do this. Let's just take people out and talk about where they can find us on the social media.
All right. If you want to find me on social media, you can find me at MeganKelleher3 on Instagram and Twitter. I also made a TikTok randomly. I don't know if I'm going to keep making videos, but I made a few. And I think, yeah, my at on TikTok is at Skullie_SKULLIE_. And I made a few videos and they're kind of silly. Netta has a more robust TikTok presence than me. So Netta, tell them about your online presence.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Netta Marie. That's NEDA. And then just Marie, like any other Marie, you know, I am on TikTok a bunch. You can follow me at Netta Marie V. That's the letter V after Netta Marie, because there's a weird child who is Netta Marie on TikTok and she appears to be literally 12 years old, so I can't be mean to her, but she did steal my name. So yeah, follow me everywhere. You can follow both of us on Twitter and Instagram at IcedPod, especially if you want to see us live tweeting and expressing our opinions. I did make a TikTok that I put on our Twitter, so if you're not on TikTok but you want to see some skating jokes from me, you can find that on Twitter at IcedPod. You can also find us on Patreon. And like we said in the break, we just celebrated our first anniversary on Patreon. So there's a very big backlog of content for you if you're, you know, feeling lonely and it's starting to get colder and you want to listen to some fun things. You can join us on Patreon and, you know, support us. Support some good causes.
That's patreon.com/IcedPod.
That is patreon.com/IcedPod. Megan, do you want to give us a list of incredible, beautiful, gorgeous people who have already changed their light bulbs and kept their lights on?
Thank you to Nikki, Samira, Joseph, Red, Susan, KM. In spirit, I am always throwing plushies at Evgenia Medvedeva, Jennifer, Heath, Julia, Danny, and Jordan.
Thank you all so much. You are truly incredible, and we appreciate your support. We also appreciate the rest of you guys. Just hanging out with us is so great of you. And we enjoy spending some of our time with you.
We really do. It's very, like, touching that even though skating is probably, like, a little less hype this year because it's just not as consistent and things are changing, like, the fact that you guys still listen to us talk about it is really awesome. And we really love that you guys are continuing to, like, hang out with us. And, you know, we love it. Makes us happy in these wackadoo times.
So, yeah, we'll be back next week to continue our coverage of Skate America with some talk about the ladies. And in the meantime, we are on the social media and we hope you stay safe and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, stay safe. Talk to you next week, everybody. Bye. Take care. Bye.